funny shit that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GER. This is the football show on a Thursday, and we have a new team here today because Stevie's back in the mix, and Connor's here as well, filling in for Conan. Welcome, lads. How's it going?
Good.
Good to have you back, Stevie.
Oh, it's great to be back.
You're refreshed?
Refreshed, ready to go, yeah. Okay, getting good. All the predictions right throughout this challenging campaign.
I've kind of been able to follow your life on Instagram now. You've putting up so many stories, two or three stories a day. I know when you train in the evenings.
That's
I know.
Great. I just wanted to keep you interested.
He wasn't at Goodison Park yesterday, though, was he?
No, he was not.
I was watching somebody's life in Goodison Park yesterday.
Have to say, I enjoyed that no end yesterday. And, like, I mean, I've said a lot about kind of goalkeepers, and I was livid, right, when I got injured and tore my hamstring. I went, I'm out of this match in Goodison. And I wasn't even including a goalkeeper as even being part of a team. Like a goalkeeper, I had to keep reminding myself, goalkeepers are also part of the team, or are they a different kind of part within the team?
Well, I have recently come out of retirement again.
You're worse than me now.
Playing for Clevey Seconds and playing in goals.
Really?
So, yeah, a goalkeeper is very much a part of a team. I've got a different opinion towards goalkeepers nowadays, yeah. So do, and I can assure you, on a one-on-one situation, it is a daunting experience.
Yeah, I'm a fella from Leash, Brian Ramsbottom. He was actually goalkeeper back when we were minors. He was sub goalie on the Leash minor team, and he replied back to me on Twitter yesterday when he saw that I was in goals. He says, "Anyone shouting, watch the bad kick out, watch the bad kick out." Remember when Brian used to be playing, like, he might have the odd dodgy kick out, so I'd always be there trying to get inside his head, watch the bad one, lads, watch the bad one. Not thinking about the poor psychology of the goalkeeper in there, yeah. And he's getting tormented by everyone outside. But your kick out, I'm sure, is great. Like, you've got
my shot stopping is pathetic. My kick out is good.
Do they let you up to take the freeze, Stevie?
No, I don't have the energy to run up the
Right, lads. So Sky Sports have revealed, and it's no secret that Sky Sports have gone for 5 of the 12 Super 8 games. So that's the deal now. So it's over 40% of the games are going to be exclusively to Sky. Not sure what I think about this, because I'm going to be going to those Super 8 games anyway, so I'm not really too put out about it. Not many people are watching Sky. We know those numbers are made very, very public. Their numbers are very, very, very poor. There's no getting away from that. So to have 5 of the 12 games, Super 8 games, which are the big glamour games, going to Sky, which nobody is watching, isn't ideal.
Yeah, well, certainly it's probably more finances towards the GAA on the back of it, but it's not good for the majority of the country, majority of GAA fans throughout the country, because you know, the figures haven't been good over the last couple of years for supporters to watch games on Sky. And you know, when you're getting to the important stage of the championship season, you know, everyone wants to clue in and be switched on and watch all the games, and they're not just going to be afforded that opportunity now, which is disappointing.
Yeah.
You'd imagine that, like, Sky would have obviously handpicked those games because of the limited amount of games available to you know. But it's just when you look at the amount of games that have been shown in general, it's I think you told us before, and there's 7 out of 29 provincial games, including the 4 finals, and it's just like the other games apart from the finals, they aren't that great, like, you know. So the quality of game that people are going to see until the Super 8s, you know, it's, you know, they say that the championship doesn't start until kind of August really in football, and it's really going to be the case for mid-July this year.
It's really not now. So hurling's dominating the championship, we know that, because their provincials are great and they've round robins and they're all high profile games, the majority of them. And football's really going to be left in the dark now until the Super 8s come along, because, like you said, Sky have gone for no provincial games.
Yeah.
Haven't even gone for Tyrone Monaghan, which, like, is disappointing. They've gone for all Super 8, and then the RTE, obviously, outside of the 4 provincial finals, we've only got 3 provincial matches. Like, I mean, Rory Gallagher has been talking during the week, Stevie. We haven't had a chance even to mention to you, we spoke about this 2 weeks ago on the show, that, like, BBC won't be showing, I think only 3 Ulster games are showing, and generally you're, like, been spoiled with 7 or 8 of them.
I think last year there were 7 out of the 9 or 8
7,
out of the 9, yeah.
Yeah, which is, like, you know, great. So, like, I mean, Tyrone Monaghan will not be on telly. Like, just think about that for a second. And Cavan Donegal is not on telly, and I'm even thinking from the podcast point of view, Jesus, I'm going to Mayo Galway. Like, yeah. What'll we do for the Cavan Donegal game? Like, how can we talk about this on the podcast if there's no way of seeing it? You know what I mean? So, like, I mean, it's definitely a new thing for big championship games not to be shown on TV.
Exactly, and particularly Monaghan and Tyrone. When you look at their league form, you know, both teams finished in the higher end of the Division 1, and they are in the top 5-6 teams in the country. So when they're paired off against each other in the championship, you would expect that that game is going to be shown live, and it's disappointing that that game in particular isn't going to be shown live. And supporters aren't going to see the quality of maybe a Conor McManus or players like that, Lee Brennan, in the first round, you know, portraying their skills.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. Other big news yesterday, lads, was the Dublin finances, and AIG have committed to another 5 years with Dublin, so it's the same deal. It's 5 million over 5 years, which is 800,000 a year, so it's an unbelievable deal for Dublin. So then, you know, obviously all the same kind of complaints come out that Dublin are getting all this development money and they're able to generate their own income through all their partners and sponsors, and AIG is just one sponsor, their main one. They've 12 other ones, and then the example of Leitrim was thrown out yesterday, and they get 20,000 per year from their main sponsor. Yeah. So, like, I mean, how they both play for the same All Ireland. Like, that's the thing here. Like, I mean, there's no level playing field. I saw John O'Loughlin saying yesterday, and he wasn't criticising Dublin. He says, you're a professional Premier League style operation working against the rest. And, like, I mean, there is no getting away from that. That is the reality of the finances. So, it's just such a difficult one.
The fact is, they are the biggest and the best at the minute, and they are going to attract the best sponsorship deals.
Yeah, but they always have, even, Stevie, even when Dublin weren't great, they were always the glamour team for sponsors.
Yeah, but to have the numbers, you know, it is the capital city, and they have the supporters, the numbers, the children playing the game at grassroots level, and you can understand why a sponsor would want to snap up Dublin.
Oh yeah, there's nobody arguing that. The argument that some people would have is that when Dublin get that sponsorship, and that's based on their natural advantage of population and being everyone goes to Dublin to work, and just being the big glamour team in the GAA, should they get all that money, or should it be spread, distributed fairly across the counties?
Yeah, well, like, it's not Dublin's fault that they attract that money, but it's not Leitrim's fault that they can't attract that big money either. They don't have the resources, they don't have the sponsorship that's available to the Dubs. But, like, while, I don't know, could you advocate like a totally socialist approach across the board where it's equally divided? But surely, like, when there's such a glaring gap between, like, when the jersey sponsor for Dublin is 800 grand a year and when the jersey sponsor for Leitrim is 20 grand, surely it's the thing that, like, if it's not divided equally, there could be a percentage of the sponsorship receipts that the counties get, and then divvied up amongst the counties, starting with the counties that need it most, like Leitrim. It's just when you look at the costs of running the teams, like, a year, like, Leitrim might only get 20 grand, but it's still going to cost them, I think they spent less in 2017 than anyone else, like 300 grand, but that's still and compare that to the Dub then, who will spend like vastly more. And as you said, although, you know, nobody's going to kid themselves that Leitrim are competing for the same All-Ireland, on paper, you know, they are, like, they're in the same competition. So I don't know, like, as I said, maybe not, you know, completely evenly distributed, but something that helps the counties that are badly in need of it, like Leitrim.
I see the argument will be put out as, what would Dublin's motivation be to generate all this income and do these great deals and have Mossy Quinn and someone else in a commercial department if it's just going to be spread out amongst everyone? But, like, I mean, there's also the argument, if the GAA hired a national marketing brand manager and he regulated all that, then he wouldn't be making sure every county is maximising. I think they should do that anyways, because not enough counties are getting good sponsorship and improving their brands and creating this whole marketing structure because they don't have the expertise. So, like, I mean, if Croke Park, for example, had a national sponsorship manager and he regulated every county, you know, and maybe did spread it out a bit fairly and pro rata, so Dublin are getting the majority of that 800,000 because they're they have the most clubs and they have the biggest playing pool. I think that would be fairer, because the way it is now, you just see Dublin just streaking on ahead of everybody else. And Kevin McStay spoke yesterday about the costs involved with Roscommon, and he thinks Croke Park should cover all mileage costs for every county because it's crippling some counties. Dublin don't have any, which is even another one. Do you know what? They have 26 lads in Dublin. Do you know what their cost is a week? Their travel cost is 1,000. It's 1,000 just for one training session to get those 26 lads back. They use taxis now. Yeah, it's always a very weird one.
Monaghan have a high volume of players up in Dublin as well. You know, so there is a serious cost element. We all know that Mayo have a large amount of players in Dublin as well, so there's a massive, massive cost in terms of transporting those players to and from training sessions. So, you know, that there is something that can be regulated a wee bit better.
Yeah, or maybe Croke Park take control of the of the mileage costs or something, and really, like, I mean, because it's crippling some county boards and not crippling others. So, like, I mean, there's another.
But you'd still love to be playing and claiming that mileage, wouldn't you?
Oh yes, 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 definitely. Well, I have to say, I was guilty of crippling the Leitrim County Board.
Yeah, we had that conversation before.
We all came down in the same
carpool
car and put in separate. I'd say that's still happening. Maybe, I don't know. You'd imagine lads aren't stupid, then again, the county boards have wised up an awful lot. And I've gotten to the stage where they're just absolutely stingy when it came to expenses. And in fairness, on their side, they just couldn't afford it. They didn't have it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the expenses have been going through the roof. But we spend a lot of time on Thursday doing the news of the week, but we're not going to get through too much because there's loads of football to look forward to. And we're going to start with Mayo Galway, lads, because this is the big game, obviously, of the weekend. This is arguably in like the biggest game in the country across the whole year outside of Cork, Kerry, you know what I mean? That's Cork, Kerry, Mayo, Galway and Tyrone, Monaghan. You'll pull one out of there. This is the big game and we're getting it very early in the championship.
Yeah.
So championship is really kicking off this weekend. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and I think Dara O'Shea maybe wrote in his column this week that it'll be shadowboxing until the Super 8s come into effect, but I don't believe that that's going to be the case. I think this game in particular is going to, you know, spark a bit of life straight into the championship, particularly given the fact that Mayo have gone to two All-Ireland finals in the last 2 years, probably should have won at least one of them, and Galway have beat them in the last 2 years in Connacht, and that's going to spark an awful tension going into this game for both sets of players and both sets of management teams as well. And you know, a lot depends in this particular game on the refereeing, and I think it's Conor Lane is down to referee
it,
so he's going to be under serious, serious pressure going into this game because you would expect fireworks.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah, like you mentioned the rivalry there, but like it's been a while since Mayo and Galway have been at, like, you could easily put Mayo and Galway probably in the top five teams in the country at the moment based on Galway's league display. And like, Mayo and Galway has always been a big game, but the last 2 years that Galway have beaten Mayo, I would argue, not just saying this because I'm from Mayo, but we kind of sleepwalked into the game 2 years ago when we were beaten in Castlebar. And even last year, I remember there was players coming back, like Seamus O'Shea, only, I think it was his first appearance of the year. Aidan O'Shea only came on as a sub. And Mayo's first 15 was a long way removed from the first 15 that we saw eventually.
Yeah, kind of, but they possibly could have won that game. Keith Higgins got sent off.
And so still, we had, like, Evan Regan had three or four chances in the last minute to level the game. Probably should have leveled the game.
Yeah.
But I think Mayo are coming at it with a different approach this year. I think probably get to it, but they realise that they probably need to go directly through Connacht. Definitely it's the best approach rather than go the long way around like they did last year. And just with, like, there's a lot of bad blood like the last couple of years, and even like it's been bad in the championship, but even in the league this year and even in the FPD league, I think there's been a total of 6 or 7 red cards.
Yeah.
So like it's going to be feisty too. As Stevie says, Conor Lane is going to have a tough job in his hands.
It's going to be a tough one, but the difficulty for Mayo coming into this game and approaching this particular match is they're facing a Galway team that's probably better than what they have been the last 2 years.
Definitely,
as well.
Yeah.
And more advanced and, you know, better suited to play, and they know their system a lot better, clearer as well. And so definitely Paddy Talley coming into the Galway setup has added a new dimension to them as well. So it'll be an interesting battle, but it's definitely going to be a sparky one that's going to have lots of intensity and one that's going to, as I said earlier on, ignite the championship campaign.
I don't think we're going to look at a classic here at all though, lads, because I think both teams are going to be really, really afraid to lose this game. I think there's going to be a lot of tension.
Yeah.
It's going to be, both teams are going to be defensive. Well, we know Galway are, we know Mayo can adapt their game plan when they're playing a defensive team, when they know they're going to play a defensive team in the championship, and they're well warned about Galway now.
Yeah.
So Mayo know exactly, and we saw Mayo adapt against Tyrone 2 years ago in Croke Park, and it was 13-12 and Mayo didn't care, and they played Tyrone at their own game and they prevented those counter attacks, and they, you know, swarmed the middle of the field as well and left a sweeper back and all those things that they're just going to have to do because Comer's going to be left up in his own. So Mayo are going to have to mark Comer. Who do you think that would be, Connor? It'll probably be Barrett, will it?
I think it's going to be Chris Barrett. I think, to be honest, that if Lee Keegan had been fit,
I think they might
have put it against him, because Rochford has had a habit of, no matter where, like, the opposition's best forward player over the years, he's done it to Michael Quinlivan, that is Sean Kavanagh.
But Keegan could also follow Walsh as well,
and he's marked Shane Walsh before and actually done quite well in them. But I just think of all the players that are likely to start for Mayo the next day, I think Barrett is kind of best suited. I think that
But they're good. So they're going to have they'll have Barrett on Comer, right?
I think they're
going to have a full time sweeper, like when Dublin adapted in the league final and put Johnny Cooper right in front of and Philly McMahon on Comer. That's what Mayo are going to do.
So he still cause problems.
That's what he'll cause problems. But like, I mean, the fact of the matter is, he's going to be double marked both in front and behind, and that goes without saying. Or else Mayo are a bit silly now. I'm just wondering who the player that's going to stand in front of them, in front of him is. Maybe
I would say it's Colin Boyle.
Is Donald Vaughan ruled out of this
game? Vaughan's back. I think Vaughan will start too, won't he? Because he's good at breaking the lines in these type of games.
I think Vaughan, and he's actually been really good against Galway in the past as well. So I think he'll start too. And like the Mayo camp has been very tight. There's been very little kind of coming out about it, but word on the street is that all the lads that are back, Vaughan, Barrett, even Brendan Harrison, who was initially meant to be ruled out of this game, but he's played a couple of challenges lately, that all of them are flying it, let's say. So
yeah.
I can see Donny Vaughan starting, I can see Chris Barrett starting, and as you said, I think it'll be, if Galway are naturally going to drop Batty's back, I think Colin Boyle is the best man to kind of sweep in front of.
He'll sweep in front, but Mayo also will leave Barrett on Comer, they'll put Boyle in front, but they'll also leave two more fellas on the half back line spare.
Do you not think they might put Vaughan and Comer for height?
Probably not. No, I wouldn't say so.
Yeah. I don't think they'd like to get him isolated with Donny Vaughan in front of the goal if that was to happen. I think Chris Barrett would be more comfortable.
Yeah. So what they'll do then, they'll leave two half backs in their positions. So like when Galway look to counter attack, which they will, they're going to be faced with getting through that kind of swarm around the middle, because Mayo will be tackling with intensity, and then they're going to hit two extra defenders on the half back line, and then they're going to have Colin Boyle, and that's the kind of blueprint for, and Mayo lads will be drilled into them to follow those. Shane Walsh tagged, because like, I'm not going to talk anymore about how I would like Galway to play, I'm going to talk about how they will play. So Shane Walsh will be back and he'll be breaking, Brannigan will be back and breaking, and those lads are going to be hit and tagged and hit hard, you know what I mean? Like, this is going to be a real battle of a game,
and it's going to be a battle. And going back to your point earlier on, you said it's not going to be a classic. I don't expect it to be a classic in terms of an open brand of football, but it can be a classic in terms of an opening championship game, and with the intensity and the man-to-man battles as well, and the sideline battles as well. Rochford, you know, hasn't had a good record against Kevin Walsh, and he'll want to redeem himself this weekend as well, and that's a very interesting battle as well. So who are them managers going to pair against each other and on the field of play as well, and who will take up the likes of Comer, who will take up the likes of the danger men in the Mayo attack as well? And that's going to be interesting, and that's why I think it's going to be a fascinating battle, because the intensity that's going to be added to this game.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt, and the mind games have started already. Like, I mean, Rochford is saying that Galway are the second best team in the country.
When well said, the
like,
same
I mean,
thing.
He must have had to like bloody swallow hard after saying that. Like, when most people would have Mayo as the second best based on, you know,
All Ireland's
records, last 2 years, Mayo and beating Kerry obviously. So Mayo, in my head, are the second best team in the country at the moment. Galway have had a good league run. Now, the jury's out for me on Galway in summer championship football.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Of how they can have this game plan work against a seasoned team like Mayo, who we know are not going to fall into that tactical trap, and Rochford just won't.
Yeah, and the thing was, even last year, Stevie referenced it earlier, like Mayo started out with very kind of deliberate tactics against Galway and Salt Hill. So until Keith Higgins got sent off before half time, Mayo were against the breeze, if I can remember, but like they played around Galway, they kept it really wide and like denied Galway any opportunity to counter attack. And Galway have gone even more defensive since, so I think Aidan O'Shea will probably operate around midfield to try and dominate that area, but that's it, as you said, leave two lads, at least two lads, probably maintain their position on the half back line, have a sweeper in front of Comer, and not let Galway, like Galway opened us up in the league in Salt Hill, and the conditions weren't even great, but not let Galway do what they've been doing to teams in the league. And just even like as you said there, the jury is out, even if, because Galway have beaten Mayo at this stage the last 2 years and kind of gone on to flounder afterwards. So while like an emphatic victory over Mayo in Castlebar would be like a huge kind of boost to their credentials, the jury will still be out on them to the extent until they kind of do it at the business end.
Yeah. Now, like obviously, to be positive about Galway, like they're coming off a brilliant league. Johnny Heaney is outstanding. Johnny Heaney seems to swap places with Sean Kelly. Like they're wearing the different numbers, but Kelly nearly always plays wing back and drops back, kind of holes around there. And Johnny Heaney, he's been outstanding. Brannigan's in the form of his life. Shane Walsh was actually dropped for the league final only, was it Sean Armstrong? couldn't fit in, he actually togged out. But so whether Shane Walsh makes the team or not, it'd be interesting. But he's got lightning pace when he does break. But you'd imagine they won't, Mayo will think they could possibly get inside his head. But like, I mean, in the Galway defence, like, does Sean Andy Kellig mark Andy Moran? Probably not. Or like, I mean, I can see Mayo just leaving Andy Moran up front, because what's the point if Galway are going with two sweepers, having two in there, and the two in there being wasted, because Galway are really committing to kind of blocking up that area. Would it not be better just have Andy in there, and if Galway want to go with two sweepers, then it's a waste of two. That's kind of a waste of one man. And
painting a very defensive picture there.
Galway are going to do that. Like, I mean, that's the way they're playing. That's what they've committed to this year, is to get two men back in front of a full forward line.
Yeah, it all depends on the thinking of Stephen Rochford and Tony McEntee and the backroom team. What way to really want to approach this? You know that Galway are definitely going to frustrate the life out of Mayo, so do they go in to do the same to Galway, or do they go in and try to open them up? And Mayo, as you have said, you know, can adapt to both systems. They have proven in the last couple of years that they can adapt to both systems. But playing Tyrone in Croke Park is different than playing Galway in Castlebar. Mm. So it is. And Galway probably a wee bit more defensive than what Tyrone would have been that day.
And it'd be very similar. Tyrone would have had a left one up that day too, you know. So, like, I mean, there would be similar kind of game plans that Mayo be up against. This is just going to be a dogfight.
It's going to be
and
a dogfight.
And I'm not sure
absolutely.
Teams during the league have done to Galway what Mayo will do on Sunday. Because I think a lot of, and I wrote about this on the website, is that a lot of teams, including me, didn't really believe Galway have committed to this style, because I didn't see the game against Tyrone, and it was a bad day, and it was like, ah, that was against Tyrone.
Yeah,
I
wouldn't read too much after a minute as well.
I wouldn't read too much into that. And then it's the next game, and you're here. It was against Donegal, and there was really defensive parts of that game. Yeah. I was like, well, they're matching Donegal for, you know, that's the way Donegal play, and they're away. And I didn't believe it right up until you're actually getting towards game seven, and you're going, Galway have really committed to this. Yeah, this isn't based on the opposition. So, like, I mean, there was an element of surprise. Now, Kevin Walsh is on the record for saying this. Kevin Walsh adopted a more defensive style with Galway the minute he came into Galway. They're just better at it this year.
Yeah.
You know, they're more sophisticated with Paddy Talley, who is obviously able to coach it that little bit better than Kevin, who would never have played that system. You know, so maybe his message wasn't getting across well enough, or maybe it was mixed.
Yeah, very few managers go in the first one or two years and get it right. You know, it does take a couple of years for a manager to actually get the system that they believe in exactly the way they want the players to play it. And you know, it seems to be the case now. I think it's maybe Kevin's third year now with Galway, is it? Third or fourth year with Galway. So things seems to be going in the right direction for him at this point. But definitely the introduction of Paddy Talley to the background team has made a huge difference.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
I just wonder on, because you mentioned the Tyrone game there, like when Mayo played Tyrone 2 years ago, and something they did, as well as kind of putting Alan Dillon on Joe McGrath at centre forward, they rotated Aidan O'Shea in and out as well. So like Alan Dillon was picking up ball around the 40 and then lobbing in like diagonal high ball into Aidan O'Shea, who won it despite having kind of a man in front of him, or was able to break it down to Andy Moran. So I think that that might be a tactic that's employed at times as well. I think that they'll try and employ Aidan O'Shea around the middle to dominate there, but the odd time, because Galway are going to have so many back and just for a different option, they might throw Aidan in for a while and try to get Andy to work off him. But be interesting to see.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned these kind of free-for-alls and flare-ups, and they happened twice already. And it was the refereeing director, I think his name is Barrett, he was saying that the second man in is getting a straight red and that's it. And like, I mean, that's been going on as long as I was playing. The second man in was always getting a red.
Yeah,
but it's hard to know who the second man is, because players are all kind of tuned into don't leave a man stranded, back a man up. So often lads are just converging on this at the same time. So like, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised of seeing two reds like in this game at some stage, and it being controversial, as in, do you know, remember the final with Mayo and Meade and the other, and like Lee McHale was just pulled out of a hat, and Colm Kyle. Like, I mean, I wouldn't like rule out red cards, and maybe the game could open up because of that. Then you don't, you know, as Brian Cody says, the game could take on a life of its own.
Absolutely, and you'd expect it this weekend. That will be the case. What I would say about it is, though, it's more important for Mayo to win the game than what it is for Galway to win the game.
Yeah, and Mayo, I'd agree with that.
I think so. Yeah, definitely.
Mayo definitely have to go the faster route towards getting to the All Ireland stages and the Super 8s if they are to finally get over that line.
Yeah, no, that's it. And like, I mean, that's the obvious thing. I don't think it knocks Galway back as much as it knocks Mayo back, because, like you said, Connor, Galway have won the last 2 years against Mayo, and it's not like it's pushed them on to any kind of greater stuff. Maybe a few more games in the qualifiers might do them no harm. Mm-hmm. You know,
And I think they have the youth and they have the squad to kind of survive a bit better than Mayo, because I think if Mayo were to go it again with 4 games in 5 weeks, I think an injury to any of their key players, as we already have key injuries to Lee, yep, to Lee Keegan and Killian O'Connor, I think we've been getting away with it for so long that I'd worry about our capacity to do it again.
Lee Keegan is a huge loss for, and that's why we mentioned Donal Vaughan. Is Donal Vaughan coming in would be a big plus to try and break through that, get through that one line, yep, and then create, yep, that overlap, because Mayo aren't blessed with pace in the forward line. Like, I mean, Killian O'Connor and Andy Moran wouldn't be too pacey.
No.
Dermot O'Connor has pace, but he almost has to get up a bit of pace before he kind of takes off. You know, that kind of way.
Colin Boyle's an excellent player breaking the line.
Yeah,
as well.
He's good at break. Kevin McLaughlin obviously is very, yep, he's very pacey. But like, I mean, are Mayo going to struggle to get through when Galway have reset and they're as intense as they are and they're as kind of structured as they are and they're as physical as they are? Like, are Mayo going to get the scores from play? That's a question with Mayo.
The one thing about them is they are the more experienced team going into this match, so they've got to use that experience to their advantage. They've got to be patient, you know, and they've got to see the openings when they are there instead of trying to force the issue from early on.
Yeah.
Just that I wouldn't completely rule out Lee Keegan.
No.
Just that there's been speculation in the last couple of weeks.
I think he'd be named at least.
Yeah, I know Rochford denied it, but he did the same thing before he turned up against Dublin in the league, and he was well ahead of schedule to return. He had both hips operated on, mm-hmm, before Christmas, and we weren't expecting him back for another month, and there he is talking out, and there he is marking Kieran Kilkenny. There's word and the word out of Mayo, although it's been quiet, is that he is back running and training, and he just seems to have Lazarus-like powers of recovery. Like, they're kind of comparing him to Robbie Henshaw, similar kind of time frame, you know, to recover from the same type of injury.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't completely rule him out. But just going back to pace, breaking the lines again, I had a feeling that Paddy Durkin was going to mark Shane Welsh if Chris Barrett is going to mark Damien Comer. And
okay,
if that happens, and if he's tied up, that might kind of deny it. Like, I think of all the Mayo halfbacks, maybe Barrett Keegan and Paddy Durkin is best at breaking the line. So
yeah,
if he's tied up, Mark and Shane Welsh, that might affect our ability to do that too.
Yeah, because
and he can
I
kick
suppose
score. It,
yeah, well, Durkin, if you're going to try and break in the lines, you have to leave Walsh, and then if you break that line and the ball comes loose, Walsh is gone. Like,
yeah,
I mean, that's the danger. You're right, he can't really be breaking lines if he has to tag Walsh,
unless
right?
They put Stephen Cohen on him, because like, Stephen Cohen is, he's fit as a fiddle and he is a decent man marker and would less likely to be had to have him backed in attack that Paddy Durkin would, so they might do that to free up Paddy Durkin.
Yeah, okay, listen, there's absolutely loads that we can you could actually go through in this game, but we're going to leave it there and we'll be back with Ben Brosnan.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morrissey for both.
We probably, in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Kieran.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Meade at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brodie on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
Ben Brosnan joins us on the line now, ahead of the Leinster quarter final against Laois on Saturday night in Wexford Park. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Colin. Thank you.
Doing a bit of research on you there yesterday, and I was reading an article and you were described as the veteran of Wexford football. I don't know how you feel about that. The first time I ever read myself being described as a veteran, I was really put out by it.
I know. I went back to one training this year and I was the oldest person there, so I felt it doesn't feel great when you're getting up to 13 or the oldest one there, but I think I'm probably the fourth oldest now at this stage.
Right, okay.
And I'm 31 this year, so it's my 10th year, so I've been there a while, I suppose.
It just shows the turnover of players, you know, that you're fourth oldest at 31.
Yeah, huge this year now, especially like when you've over the last few years, like now obviously 5-6 years ago, we would have lost Colin Morris, Red Barry, Dave Murphy, that sort of kind of age group, and then there was a few more in between, like Graham Maloney, that, and then obviously with a huge turnover from this year to last with PJ Kieran, Shane Roach, Joey Wadden, Kevin O'Grady gone over to New York, and then there's 3 or 4 lads gone to the hurling as well. So I think in the first game of the league game this year against Fermanagh, I think out of 26 on the squad, only 11 actually played a competitive game for Wexford.
Wow.
So like this year was a huge turnover, like, you know, especially going into Division 3 and against like it's probably since I've been playing, and I was playing in Division 3 probably 4 or 5 times, I suppose, or more, 5 or 6 times. Probably one of the toughest Division 3s with all the Northern teams in it. And then obviously the likes of Sligo and Longford, who's kind of been there for the last few years, they're always kind of there and thereabouts that are getting promoted or middle of the group. So it was a good test for us, you know, and, but I suppose ultimately ended in disappointment getting relegated. But we actually were pretty competitive through the whole way, and finished off well then against Armagh.
Yeah, I saw that you were actually competitive in every game except for Derry, and Derry away is a kind of a long trek.
Yeah, no, we were, like, you know, any of the games, like, a little bit of luck, like, our discipline probably wasn't the best, and especially with some of the senior players, you know, there was, I think, 3 or 4 games in over with that someone sent off, and that's not going to help at all. That can have a knock-on effect for each game. Then we were never really full strength, really, apart from probably the Armagh game. And then, you know, I suppose the last game of the year, they weren't up for it as much, but still, like, you know, it was good to get the win in Wexford Park, you know, kind of leading in towards the championship.
Yeah, it's some change from this time last year, because this time last year, you know, you had such a great run in the league, you had it wrapped up after 5 games, the promotion, you didn't play well in the final, granted, but you had a good team, like all the vibes coming out was that Banty, like, is a high profile manager and everybody was committing, and then the whole season just fell apart, and probably the knock on effect then was all the fellas on the borderline of retiring, or like, that's enough for me, and now you're down maybe 5 or 6, yeah. Like you mentioned their names.
Yeah.
So it's been a huge change from this time in just a year.
It really has, yeah. Like last year we had a really, really good start. I think they promoted last year after 5 games, and then we gave everyone in the squad a kind of a bit of game time towards the end of the league. In the last two league games against Carlow and against Westmeath, and it probably didn't help because we were actually on a good run, and then we kind of stopped, and we got beat by Carlow, beat by Westmeath, and then we got a good beating by Westmeath in the championship, or in the league final, and then that kind of knocked down then towards Carlow in the championship. But this year I think we're maybe going the way, like, we started off like slow enough in the league. We had a good win now the last day, say against Armagh, and then, you know, like building up towards Leash, you know, like Leash. Obviously on the other side of things, we're probably in Division 4 where probably they shouldn't have been, over especially over the last few years' form, and you know, like, they haven't come in from winning all their games this year and then into Saturday's game.
Yeah, so are you, like, I mean, how's the morale? You're saying, you're obviously painting a positive picture in that you're relegated, but you won your last game, and obviously that's the kind of mind frame you need to bring into the game. But, like, I mean, are you realistic? Yeah, yeah. Are you realistic about your hopes now that you've lost so many players? Or
No, we have lost a lot of players, you know, but there's an awful lot of good young lads that have come in, and like, a lot of lads kind of wouldn't have committed last year, have committed this year and things like that. And you know, like, look, Leash are very, very strong on paper. They have 4 or 5 obviously brilliant forwards, and there's a lot of experience there. But like, coming out to Wexford Park, we played Westmeath in Wexford Park this year, they beat us by a point, and we played Armagh in Wexford Park this year and we beat them by a point. So we do, like, Wexford Park does suit the style of play that we play. And Leash as well, like, Leash are an attacking team, they're not defensive, so that's going to suit us as well, we feel. And you know, like, it should be a good game. Like, it's going to be, I'd imagine it'll be some way high scoring. The last time Leash came down to Wexford Park in the championship in the qualifiers, I think they beat us by a point twice, but like, they were very, like, attacking, high scoring games. So we do have a really good morale in the camp. The fact that, like, the championship probably has come so soon as well for the league this year compared to other years. You know, like, everyone's kind of in good form and kind of looking forward to it.
So, well, you mentioned the style. Paul McLaughlin's obviously come in, and, like, I mean, has he changed the style much? You're playing more of an attacking game, but Banty would be more of an orthodox type of manager as well, right?
Yeah, he was. Like, we probably were a little bit more defensive last year than we are this year, I would say. Now, like, that can obviously go 2 ways. You know, in the league we did concede a few goals and we were probably caught on the counter a little bit. That's something that we have tried to fix, obviously, over the last few weeks. But we are trying to say play with 4 or 5 forwards attacking each time, you know, running off the shoulder, quick ball into the full forward, and that's all kind of what we're trying to do. I think we scored 5 or 6 more goals this year than we did last year in the league, you know, and that's in the Division 3, probably playing against obviously tougher opposition. So we are definitely probably, as an attacking unit, scoring more or probably playing better than we were last year. It's just kind of getting the right mix between, now, obviously, attack and defence.
Yeah, is that important?
Leafs forwards are very good.
Yeah,
you know, like you have like Gary Watson, Ross Munley, Tony Kingston. They're all like very, very good players. They've been all around for the last 5-6 years. Like, so they are obviously going to need to be watched. Like.
Yeah, I suppose, is it important when you're playing at a Division 3, Division 4 level to maybe play more orthodox so like players can actually enjoy the game? Like, I mean, if you're playing at that level and playing a type of game that is just really difficult to play in, you know, players won't probably commit.
No, like, and that's something that I think we've definitely seen in my career over the last few years. Like, with the style we would have been playing maybe 2 or 3 years ago and last year a little bit, that it does take an awful lot of our players. You're asking an awful lot of them, you know, especially like going forward, centre forwards, to do an awful lot of tracking back and then trying to get forward.
Yeah.
But this year we're kind of trying to just play as much like you were saying, kind of orthodox, and let people, you know, try to express themselves as much as possible. Paul is all on for that. He's all on for, obviously, look, we want to go there and want to win the games, but his kind of style and philosophy is that he wants to play nice football. He was a corner forward, forward when he was playing as well. He kind of understands this also from a forward aspect, but the best way, and especially with us, like, we're not big men. A lot of us, like, there's very few of us in the 6 foot, like that sort of real dot, and a few, Brian Malone, a few others. The rest of us are probably small, fast forwards, which, like, doesn't obviously the kind of more space, that sort of stuff probably would suit us more.
Yeah, you mentioned Ross Munley there, and Leash won the Division 4 final. It was the first thing Ross won since 2003, and he's been around that long. Like, I mean, you've been around I think it's 07-08, like, I mean, and you've played Dublin and Leinster finals and done really well against Dublin and Leinster finals. How difficult is it to keep going, you know, realistically, knowing now that kind of level that you've got to is going to be really difficult to get back to?
Yeah, I suppose it's hard. I wouldn't be playing football for Wexford if I didn't think I would be bringing something to the team or that sort of thing. Like, when I feel like I don't want to be someone there just because I've been here for the last 10 years and he has to be there doing that sort of thing. Like, if I feel like I offer something to the team, like I'll commit as much as I can to the team. Like, I suppose for Ross, and he's been the top, probably the best Leafs player for the last, I don't know how many years, you know. Like, in Wexford we've always had like really, really good players, and like there's, like, it's usually the game, like, if one of us play good, the next game he's usually marked because obviously you're not well known, and then someone else play goes, like PJ or Ciarán, whoever it was over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
But Ross has nearly always been marked, like, been man marked, and is always, like, he's always nearly came out on top in fairness. He's been absolutely brilliant over the last 10-15 years. He's had a great career, and he's, like, we played him in a practice match last year in Tinner Island. You know, it was kind of in between the club championship, so we didn't even have full strength teams, but Ross was still there playing that sort of game. So obviously he still loves it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the reason why I'm still there as well. I really do like playing for Wexford. No, obviously, like, the last years they haven't been getting to Leinster finals, and we got to a league final last year, but it hasn't been probably as successful as we had at the start of my career. But no, I still do enjoy going training, and especially coming up to this time we were playing championship in Metro Park. Like, no, it's really, really good.
Yeah, look, I suppose it doesn't get better any better than that. And, like, I mean, you've got your own business now, so, like, I mean, you what's it called, body bro, and you make training gear and gloves and all stuff like that, so I'm sure you can tailor your own working day around training, and it's nice and relaxed for you rather than a stress.
No, obviously there's times when it's stressful, but it is good. And even, like, no, it's anytime you deliver gear to someone, you always want to talk to you about football or GAA anyway, you know, so it's a good way to kind of keep in with people that way. But yeah, no, so that's like for trainings and stuff. I think, like you're saying, I can taper around work to go to training, go to the gym without really having too much issues with it.
And how's business going with all that training gear?
Yeah, it's going well. Yeah, you know, we've secured the 3 licenses now with the LGFA and the Camogie and the handball. You know, so we have them 2 licenses to produce like jerseys and training gear to all the associations. We can supply like all GA gear as well, apart from the GA jerseys, as they don't have the license for the GA logo yet. But you know, hopefully down the line that's something we'll be working towards.
So how do you get that? O'Neill's have that sewn up, is it? That how do you actually get, how can you break into that market?
You'd have to tender for the license. So there's a certain amount of licenses that the GAA give out per year, or like per term, whatever it is. So like they have, right. You know, there's an awful lot of companies, O'Neill's and Masita and Azure, they all have like the GAA license. So at the minute, it's not up for negotiation for a new company to break into that market. So it's just right. Kind of waiting now until they kind of have everything kind of. I think hopefully in the next year that they might kind of release another license, and then we can try to apply for it that way.
Okay, and does that apply to club jerseys then as well, or you could actually make club jerseys, or is that part of the
No, whole we can't make club jerseys. We can't make club jerseys either. Really, it's just because we can't put that GAA logo on it. So the only thing we can really do is the training jerseys, half sticks, all that sort of stuff for GAA clubs, and then for the LGFA and Camogie and handball, we can more or less do everything for them.
Okay. Okay, that's interesting, isn't it? It must be frustrating to try and get in, even for a club jersey.
Yeah, I know, yeah, and especially, like, you know, obviously there's an awful lot of competition in that market, and that's one thing that clubs usually get every year, it's probably a set of jerseys, because the sponsor always wants to maybe sponsor that, and that's the most seen thing in the club, obviously, is the set of jerseys for the senior team. But yeah, the fact that we're not able to do that is it's a pity that we're not able to do it, yes, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, listen, to finish up with, I have to talk about the blonde hair that's gone now. So you said you're 31. Yeah. Did that go on your 30th birthday when you had to get into the real world and be like a proper adult?
More or less when I set up my business, I got rid of that.
Was it?
I had to try to when I was going to meetings, it wasn't great with big long hair blowing down over. So I got that cut a few years ago. I suppose you grow over all of a sudden as well. Very quickly, you kind of look back on them, and you do look pretty stupid, I suppose. But sure, it was young.
Yeah, you're being stereotyped in business meetings as like a lazy surfer who doesn't. There must be something about the long blonde hair. Your man O'Keefe, the wing back for the hurlers, has long blonde flowing locks as well. It's unusual for hurlers.
Unusual for him when it comes out to the back of the helmet.
Yeah, definitely does. Listen, come here, thanks for taking the call, and I'll say best of luck against Laois, but obviously, you know, I don't really mean it.
Yeah. Thanks,
Colin. When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning, and I had the podcast on from Newbridge Southern 8, and that helps the journey, to be honest, if I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs. Depends on mood, man. Ed's good for if you're in a soppy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GAA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
Let's get to some predictions, lads, and we'll start with Mayo Galway. We'll keep this short, obviously, because we spoke about them at the start of the show. So Mayo are 8-11 in this. Like, I don't know if it's a home advantage. Galway are 6-4. That's Galway are great value in this game. Now, whether you want to predict this or do you want to bet on it? Like, I mean, we probably have to maybe separate these two, because for me, betting, Galway are the no-brainer there for me at 6-4.
What's the, is there a handicap? Probably just,
I didn't check the handicap. There wouldn't be much. It'd be probably just a point with those odds.
Yeah, I think those odds are very favourable. I wouldn't fancy Mayo at those. But last week I said the Mayo are just about going to get over the line, so I'm going to stick to it. I think it's too important to the season as a whole that they have to win. So we have a tendency to show up in big games, apart from maybe the biggest one. So I'm backing us for this one.
You're carrying on a long-standing tradition on this show of backing your own county to win.
And I've seen how successful that has been.
Yeah. It hasn't worked out too well for any
of us.
Maybe
I'll go Galway. So
Stevie,
I'm going to go Galway. You're not going to like that, Connor, but I'll go Galway. I think they are good value for their bet, and you know, based on their league campaign as well, and league is very important for a team to build up momentum. Although I have heard that Mayo have played a clinking game recently against Donegal, and you know, playing on top form as well, so maybe they could be picking at the right time too. But on this occasion, you know, based on what I've seen this year, I'm going to go for Galway.
Yeah, okay, right. Well, I'm going to go for Mayo. I think home advantage, and simply not allowing Galway beat them three times in a row, like, it's just going to push Mayo over the line against Galway, and I think that they'll frustrate Galway. I think Galway are just going to face a team that are tactically clued into their game plan. this year more than they have seen before, because obviously Dublin would have done it to an extent, but not really, because Dublin like to maybe force the game. Mayo just won't give Galway a kick of it on the counter attack, and I think that will take away a lot of Galway's kind of strengths from the defensive system. So I'll go for Mayo at 8-11, but the value there is, I'd see it as a very 50-50 game, and the value on the betting is definitely Galway at 6-4. Another weird betting here, lads. These are Paddy Power prices, and who am I to kind of question Paddy Power? He's a lot wealthier man than me. Donegal are 4-11 against Cavan. Now, I know Ballybuffet, I think Ballybuffet is making these odds the way it is, and the record there, because Cavan are going up and Donegal are meeting them on the way and heading back down to Division 2. So, like, you know what I mean? You'd imagine a Division 1 team next year against a Division 2 next year would be a little bit closer in the betting here than that.
Yeah, I think so, but Ballybuffet is playing a huge part in the odds here, I would imagine, from Paddy Power point of view.
You were on a great Armagh team. You hammered Donegal and Ballybuffet. I've never played in Ballybuffet.
No, we actually haven't.
Did you not hammer them that year?
No, we drew at them in Ballybuffet, and we beat them in the replay in Clonus.
Ah, okay. That was when McFadden's taken off and apparently was smiling in the dressing room.
They beat us then by a point in Ballybuffet after a last minute goal by Kevin Cassidy.
Right. Obviously Ballybuffet has something about it.
Listen, we should have beat them in 2007. The day we went up and played them there, but we were leading the whole way, and it was a hit and hope ball into the square. Sun got in Paul Hardy's eyes, mishandled the ball, and Kevin Cassidy came in and fisted the ball the net. So that's what beat us that day. But
why is Ballybuffet? I wonder. Is the pitch tight?
It's a tight pitch. Right. It is a tight pitch. It's an intense atmosphere. But Donegal are at home there, so they are, and they love playing in Ballybuffet, and they do believe that they have, I suppose, an added incentive to kick on, because they have a great record there, and that does play a huge part in any team going out, confidence wise. So it does. My point on Cavan at 11-4 is, yes, Cavan have been promoted back to Division 1, and Donegal are going the opposite way. I believe Cavan, all of their top players have to be on top of their game to actually beat Donegal. And I think man for man, pound for pound, Donegal are just simply a classier team than what Cavan are.
They are. Well, like, I mean, most of us, we'd all go for Donegal. I'm just thinking those odds are a little bit kind of 3-1, and I'm not sure.
Possibly swayed by the league final as well. Cavan conceded 4-16. I think I know that was a bit of a misnomer, because you know, it was championship that all that matters. But that would have been the last game that Cavan played. Plus, also, I think everyone kind of realised that although Donegal went down, they were in hard, you know, they were in hard luck to go down. They played really well. Yeah. We're on the receiving end of really narrow defeats and played well in a lot of games. So I'd say that's kind of impacting on the odds as well. But I just think that Donegal have a clean bill of health. I think Ryan McHugh is back. They'll have Murphy. They'll have McNeilis, McBurdy. I just think in Ballybuffet they're too strong. I think Cavan are missing Darren McVitie as well.
Is McVitie out?
I wouldn't rule him out.
If he's out there in big trouble, there's not. He's their class act. And my question before the league final against Roscommon, who is their danger up front? That these, when you just need a bit of danger in the full forward line. I didn't see them having it. And like, I mean, one or two fellas from Cavan replied to me on Twitter, said I didn't have a clue what I'm talking about. And then I look at the league final. McGee was taken off after 29 minutes. O'Reilly at half time, and Bradley after 50 minutes. Proving my point that outside of Mackie and McVitie, like, they don't have enough danger. Shawnee Johnson came on in that final. He was outstanding when he came on, so he'll start. But then again, Donegal won't fear him, because Paddy McGrath will, like, you know what I mean. Shawnee doesn't like playing against that. But it, like, I mean, again, against Mayo, a lot of the old stock were back for Donegal, because, like, I mean, the defence looked very youthful for a while. But back against Mayo was Paddy McGrath, Neil McGee and the full back line, Frank McGlynn and Leo McClune. McClune had been there the whole league. They were back in the half back line. Then you'll have Ryan McHugh in the half back line. So you're going to have a very experienced team. Michael Murphy, McFadden experienced. McFadden's fairly experienced now. He's no longer a new face.
It's up front, captain, I think.
It's up front. You'll see a little bit more of a spark from Donegal with Jamie Brennan. His movement is great, and McBrearty, they'll play a two man full forward line, and then you have McNeilish and Thompson. Yep. Paul Brennan will work a lot. Yeah. He's in the half forward line. He's a half back. I like the look of Donegal. I think that they've got that little bit of spark, a bit like Kilkenny in the hurling. You just need four or five new lads that are hungry to rejuvenate the older lads.
I would actually go as far to say that Donegal would be my bet for Ulster this year. I think
Monaghan sold you going through that team there.
No. I just like the way they're setting themselves up this year. I like the way Declan Bonner is actually sending his team out to play football, and I believe over the last couple of years they've always played within themselves. They've always played a system that didn't suit the players that they have. They now have poly
it's
players.
Not yet. Their system now isn't that far removed from before. The differences they're leaving two up and they're kicking it.
Exactly.
More.
They are more attack minded, and you've got clinical finishers like Paddy McBrady, who is in the top three forwards on his day in the country. You've got to utilise that as best possible, and Donegal have done that more throughout the league campaign. Yes, they got relegated, but as Connor said, you know, they're very, very unlucky against top teams, you know, getting beat by a point or two in some good open games.
They were very
football.
Competitive, yeah.
The other thing, going back to Ballybuffet, and one thing that can, I suppose, get under the skin of some players as well, it's an old style tunnel that you come out onto the pitch and you walk up the steps, and you're seeing the supporters before you actually see the pitch, and that can be a daunting experience, particularly for a young player. So
how long is the tunnel? Is it a good long tunnel?
No, it's not a long tunnel at all, but it's just that experience, that intimidating factor that you're coming up from underneath the ground almost, even though you're not, it's only a wee tunnel. But it looks as if that you are coming up from underneath the ground, and then you all of a sudden you're hit with this rapturous roar and you're taken to the field, and that can I suppose turn young players off.
Do the stewards make sure both teams come out at different times? Like, can there be a situation
it'd be different times
tunnel?
Yeah,
because I remember in Dr. Cullen Park there's a big tunnel, and it's down at the end of the pitch. Now the tunnel might be 30 metres long, right. 20 metres long in the dark, and the two teams are just heading out at the same time. It's madness. Mayhem could go on in there.
There used to be one in McHale Park. They've changed it since, but you used to come down the steps from the dressing room in the sport lawn, and then there'd be about 30 metres, but pure dark. Absolutely, pure dark. You couldn't see a thing. And apparently the Mayo Galway clashes back in the day before they come out to the pitch fighting, because they go out at the same time. It'd just be shoulder and
Tullamore, each other. Tullamore has the same one, a good long tunnel too. It's dangerous, and there's steps down into it. I don't know. When I see two teams going off the pitch and they're mingling going down those steps, Christ, let's see who comes out the other. Let's see who comes out the other side. Right, we've got the Leinster Championship round one. The great thing about the Leinster Championship is that it's a really, really good championship if Dublin weren't in it. There's four quarterfinals here, and they're all, I think they're closer. Maybe Offaly are 1-4 to beat Wicklow. She's Offaly have gone down to Division 4. They're not going to have Keane Johnson, who's their best forward. He's still 18 years old, and he's eligible for under 20. So the Offaly County Board have told Keane Johnson, you're playing under 20, right? Which is interesting in itself. And I'm kind of on. I'm always on the player side against county boards, but I'm kind of on the county board side here. You're only 18. Play your under 20 for a year, and then come up and play senior. Keane Johnson's argument is he could get injured next year and never play again. He could go travelling, or he could emigrate, and his chance is now to play senior football, and he wants to. It's a really difficult one. Roscommon have Kieran Lennon, who's been one of their best forwards right throughout the league, and he's committed to under 20s, so he's not playing senior. So McStay and Kate Curran have done a deal with Lennon, and McStay has said you can have him. This is incredible stuff. McStay says this is better for his development to play the under 20. Obviously Clifford and Sean O'Shea and all the Kerry lads are playing senior. They're not playing. My idea of this whole thing is that the under 20 is a nonsense. It should be an under 19, and you're committed to under 19, because I do think if you're 19 you should be playing senior. You know what I mean? A lot of 19, the Kieran Kilkennys, Jack McCaffreys, all these lads, they came up as 19-year-olds and impacted it. I think it's time enough when you're out of 19, then go up senior. But the idea that you have to play under 20 and then go senior, you're 20 years old. Two of my best years senior were when I was 19 and 20.
Exact same with me, and even Ronan Clark for us when he was a young lad.
He wouldn't have had him.
More than able to play at that level. If you're good enough and strong enough, allow these players play.
But you see, this is the thing. Because the way it is that you're not allowed to play both. So you're missing out on an underage grade, which I think you should be committed to an underage grade. I find it hard.
What would you prefer to play in? I prefer to play senior. That's the ultimate goal for any player going up through the ranks. Is to represent our county at senior level. And if I was given a decision between under 20s or senior grade, I'd pick senior.
But I thought my progression through minor, and then when I finished minor, I played 1 year under 21 the next year, and the next year I went senior, and I felt I was ready for senior. But if I had gone in straight out of under 18, I'm not sure I would have been ready that next year. Now,
but you would have went in if asked.
Of course, I would have gone in a second.
Yeah.
But at the under 19 grade would give you one more year after minor, and then you go in. And maybe I'm saying that's the right thing to do because that suited me, or that's how my progression. I think you didn't play straight out of minor. You played another year, and then you went in.
I played 4 years under 21.
Yeah, but so before outside of minor, how many years after minor did you play under 21 before senior?
I had a gap year.
Gap year.
So
see that? But that's
senior.
What the under 19 would come in.
Exactly,
so you would have to commit to under 19. And after under 19, everyone can play senior. But before under 19, you're banned from senior, which would rule out Clifford and Sean O'Shea for one more year, and then we'll see them. I think that's the best thing.
Should the decision be left to the player himself?
Well, it's not the player's decision.
Yeah, but I don't want to miss out on watching David Clifford this year. I want to see him.
Yeah, you know, but that's selfish. What about his development? That is the selfish thing. I'm the same. I want to see him too, but it also...
Put the gun to David Clifford's head and ask him, what do you want to play? And I can guarantee he'll say senior football.
No, but sure, Stevie, that's obvious. Like, what player is not going to say senior?
But then let them play senior football, and that's it.
So I agree with you.
No, I agree with you. It should be under 19s and not under 20s.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's it. So if you have to commit to under 19s or under 20s, and you're, like, your last year at under 20... I think that's too long to be kept out of senior.
Yeah, well, he's probably looking and thinking, well, not only can I not play this year, I can't play next year as well. But whereas under your scenario, like if he was told, right, it's just this year, but next year, fine, he'd probably be okay.
Right, okay. Well, listen, Offaly Wicklow, we'll get a prediction on that. Offaly are 1-4, Wicklow are 7-2. Wicklow have had a disastrous year so far. John Evans, their manager, like, they just, I've sympathy on Wicklow. It's not John Evans' fault, who's a good manager. And, like, Wicklow just don't have the players. They were on the slide under Johnny McGee, who brought in a lot of young players.
Yeah.
The players under the Mico times that you'd know all their names, you wouldn't know too many of the Wicklow players now, you know. Yeah. That's just the reality of it. So, like, I mean, you would fancy Offaly strongly. It's Inamore Park. I'm not sure 1-4 fancy. I don't trust Offaly at 1-4, but
did Offaly not stay up? I know you said
Offaly stayed up,
just
the last minute. It was Derry and Wexford that went down. Yeah. Sorry, I got that wrong.
But yeah, just because they've at least some form to go on, you know, in staying up in Division 3, and Wicklow didn't win a game in Division 4. In fairness,
Offaly's form came at the very end of the league as well, so maybe they've that bit of momentum coming into that. So yeah, we'll all fancy Offaly in that one. Carlow and Loud, this is a harder one to call. Carlow are 5-4. This is in Inamore Park as well. This is a double header. Carlow Loud is first at 2 p.m. And the Offaly Wicklows at 4. I would have had them the other way around personally if I was going to go watching them, because Carlow are 5-4, Loud are 4-5. So this is a really tough one to call. Stevie, I'll start with you.
Good man, thank you. From my memory, it's a big enough pitch, is it?
Inamore Park.
It's a big pitch. So, yeah, I think that'll suit Louth. Louth actually have some decent footballers and some players who are capable of playing good open football and express themselves. And it might go against Carlo's system and defensive way of playing. Also, Carlo are missing Brenton Murphy, one of their key players, and I think that'll go against them. So my tip for this game will be Louth.
Right, okay. Confidence is very low in Louth, right? So they had the disastrous league, and they're down. They're both Division 3 teams next year. That's why the betting is so close. Is Pete McGrath tactically sophisticated enough to know what to do against Carlo, who are a very, very defensive team?
Yeah, possibly not. I don't know. I think there's a scalp there. I think Brendan Murphy being out is huge, but I think, like, Louth have no form to go on. I think they lost their games by an average of nearly 10 points a game in Division 2.
They were playing a much greater standard, and that's
what you have to read into it. Like, how much better is the standard between Division 4 and Division 2? And obviously there's a big gulf in class, but there's also the confidence that Carlo will have got from their promotion, and the kind of, not the humiliation, but the deflation that Louth will have from losing games repeatedly by a heavy margin. I just think, with the momentum behind Carlo, I just think they've a real chance of the scalp there.
But still getting into it, Louth will be saying to themselves, this year we are a Division 2 team, Carlo are a Division 4 team, and that's it.
Yeah, we're better than them. I'd worry about Louth tactically, maybe, you know, but, like, I mean, on paper, Louth would have better players than Carlo.
Yeah,
they just would, you know. I mean, they're just in a bit of disarray this year, you know. That kind of, like last year, you would have Louth way ahead in the betting to beat Carlo.
Absolutely,
this
year,
it all changes. So it's a 50-50 one for me. I think just because of the quality of player, I might go with Louth. I think Carlo's bubble might be a little bit burst after losing twice to Laois.
Yeah.
The Carlo Rising thing isn't exactly, you don't hear the Carlo Rising thing as much anymore. I think the Brendan Murphy thing is very, very embarrassing for the county. Like, he was Mr. Carlo, he was doing the Carlo Rising hashtags. I don't necessarily blame him for going if he got a huge offer and maybe he needed the money in his life. Who knows? You would imagine he got an offer he couldn't refuse for him to leave a county that was on the up.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think just those extra things I think when you're come with a county like Carlow, who might have a lot of confidence, but it's built on momentum. It's not confidence that's ingrained in them. They don't have that in them. So if things start going wrong against Loud, you know, you might not, it could easily get into those players' heads that, right, oh, geez, well, it is all going against us now. The rising isn't. I'll go for Loud. Last one is Wexford and Laois. Wexford are way outsiders for this. At home in Wexford Park, 11-4, Laois are 1-3. So the Laois team is picked, lads. Ross Munley's starting. It's great to see. This is 2018. He made his debut in 03.
Yep.
So he's on the go a long time. Had a brilliant league final. Gary Walsh is back into the team. There's a couple of changes. Rory Fennell is in cornerback because Robbie Piggott has gone to America. And it's not too much. it's not Damien O'Connor is in for Brian Glynn. That's four changes from the league final. You'd imagine Laois are going to be too strong for Wexford.
Yeah, I think so.
Again, it's two counties going in different directions.
Exactly, yeah. But and traditionally, down through the years, it's always been a tough enough contest between both, but I fancy Laois being too strong on this occasion. I think they are going in the right direction. Going down to Division 4 last year was a huge blow to them, but they've come straight back up, convincingly won the league final and are on, I suppose, confidence builder now at the minute as well, and going in the right direction. So I just think they're going to be too strong.
Yeah, I'd be on the same. Or Conor, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, no, I think that well, not just saying that to Plumas, you or Antimoli, but I don't think Laois should have been anywhere near Division 4 in the first place. I think they're way too good for that. I just, even looking at the team you sent on, I think it is a strong looking spine, particularly through Begley, O'Loughlin and Donny Kingston centre forward, with Gary Welsh back in corner forward as well. He was top scorer in the league, so I think if they're any way up for it at all, I think they'll be way too strong for Wexford next
year. Yeah, you'd imagine so. And like we talked with Ben Brosnan there in part two, you know, Wexford, just with all the retirements and all the household names, a little bit like Wicklow. Like, I mean, Wexford are unrecognisable from team four or 5 years ago, losing to Dublin by only 2 points in a Leinster final, or was it 3 points? Like, I mean, it's unbelievable to have Ben Brosnan still soldiering away. And all his kind of comrades have gone, and he's stuck down Division 4 playing a
10 years since they were in Ireland semi-final. Like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Now that team
please
changed.
Don't remind us.
They beat you, didn't they?
They did in the quarter final.
Oh my god, yeah, that was a huge one for you. And Fermanagh beat you. That Fermanagh one was worse.
That's
probably
going even further back.
That's going back further.
We're not meant to be digging all these.
You're capable of taking your eyes off the ball, Stevie. You never took them off against us now, but you did take them off. Right, listen, as that's all we have time for, we'll be back on Monday with a review show. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back to their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.